I call it the football game of life between like 25 and 65. And it's a sprint to 65 as I get closer. But most mistakes are made between 25 and 35 for people. And by that, usually their biggest mistakes with housing too. So they rent too much house, or they bite off too much house, or they get stuck in a house or a mortgage and they can't really grow or get out of it because they can't save any money. They're house rich, cash poor, so to speak.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools and make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me today is David Van Horn. David, how are you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I am excellent. Just enjoying the beautiful snow and excited to talk to you. So since 2007, Dave, you have served as president and CEO of PPR Note Company, which is a holding company that manages several funds that buy, sell, and hold residential mortgages nationwide. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Awesome. So your expertise derived from over 30 years of residential, commercial, and commercial real estate as a licensed realtor, real estate investor, and fundraiser. As the latter, you've raised over $100 million for both notes and commercial real estate, which is very impressive. And you also own a considerable portfolio of residential investment properties as well as various commercial holdings. So with that said, Dave, can you give my listeners a little bit more about, you know, kind of what you got going on and your background?
Well, my background's kind of crazy because it's in a lot of different areas. So, you know, I went to college. First, I was an accounting major and I switched to management and got out of school and couldn't get a job. So there you go. And I was working in construction and became a painting contractor. Was a painting contractor for several years. In fact, my oldest son still has a business. My oldest son's 34. And, you know, then I got into real estate when I was 26 as an agent. And then I kind of morphed into, I was actually going for my broker's license when I took a course and the teacher said, it was a real estate investment course for getting your broker's license. And the guy said, how many people here have credit cards? Everybody raised their hand. He goes, how many people are buying houses with them? And everybody's hand went down. And then that night I went home, I couldn't sleep. And I probably bought my first 10 or 12 houses that way, where I wrote myself a credit card check, deposited in my account, paid cash for the house. Cause I knew how to find them on the MLS. I knew how to fix them up. I just didn't have capital.
Yeah.
And then that gave me the capital to get going. And then I would move a tenant in, refinance it, pay back the credit cards and go do it all over again. Now I wouldn't recommend doing that today because of cash advance fees. They were a lot much different back then. So it was like an opportunity of a being in the right place at the right time kind of thing. But, and then I, you know, went on from there. Next thing you know, my portfolio jumped up in value and I had a couple million in equity and I started using lines of credit. And then I had about 11 lines of credit and I would lend out money and became a lender, private lender, almost like a hard money lender. And that's kind of how I first got into the note space. And then, when it came to institutional notes, I got into that by accident. I was running a real estate investment group that started out pretty small with about a dozen people in Philadelphia area. And next thing you know, it turned into five states and six cities from Baltimore to New York. And we had 8,000 people in our database. So it grew. And I used to interview the speakers. And there was a speaker one time who was raising capital for pools of mortgages out of Manhattan. And, you know, right before the downturn, me and my partner, you know, reached out to him and said, show us how to collect on delinquent assets and we'll buy assets from you. And the rest is kind of history. And then today we're a pretty big company. We have like 30 employees. We manage over 7,000 loans. We probably own about 100 to 200 REOs nationwide. We deal about three quarters of what we deal with today's first mortgages. And then we also deal with junior liens. Junior liens is where we started. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. We, one to four family residential is our space that we operate in. So,
so for, you know, people that don't know much about your space, give us a little quick, like, you know, commercial, what is your space all about?
Well, I mean, think about it. We buy loans that were originated by banks that are mortgages, right? So it's an asset-backed investment. I tell people pretty much everybody's in the note business. They just don't realize it, right? So it's everybody has a credit card. Everybody has student loans, medical debt, auto debt, mortgages. It's funny, like when I really can't get someone to understand what we do, I say, just stop paying your mortgage. You'll find out exactly what we do. We would be the company reaching out to you to collect on that asset. So, so all the loans we buy, we don't originate mortgages. The mortgages we buy are already originated by a bank and they're underwritten by a bank. So we don't typically buy like seller finance mortgages, for example. That's a whole nother universe. There's like two note worlds, so to speak, in the mortgage-backed note business. But everybody's kind of in the note business. You know, they sign a promissory note to a credit card company or a student loan originator. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to introduce to people, how would you like to be the recipient of those checks instead of writing all the checks? That's really what it amounts to. So what I like about the mortgage business is that if I can buy it at a discount with a high yield with collateral, I beat the stock market almost all the time. And, you know, I was someone that used to trade options. So there's no real collateral in the market, right? But there in the real estate market or the mortgage market, there is. There's collateral behind that.
So are you buying all, you know, distressed?
Pretty much all distressed. Sometimes we'll get some reperforming or subperforming portfolios, but mostly it's mostly NPLs, non-performing.
Sure. So your company goes in, you buy these non-performing, and then you sell them to investors.
Sure, we try to modify them. Yeah, and it depends. Like, there's different plays based on your strategy or your company's model. Some people buy vacant first liens in to get the properties, for example.
Sure.
So you'll see, like, almost like people that buy REO tapes, real estate owned, where it's, you know, already taken to foreclosure and the bank owns the property instead of the mortgage anymore. You know, you'll see people buy those tapes. Well, some of those REO folks will jump into our space when the REOs dry up.
Yeah.
You know, as another way to get property.
Yep. Okay.
Cool. We're more into the modification and keeping people in their homes type strategy.
Okay. So you're going to keep them. Do you keep them in long term? You modify, you keep the people in. Do you then keep the note for long term, or then do you take and you sell that note or variation? Maybe you do both.
Well, it's both. And the reason it's both, it depends on the market.
Yeah.
Right now it's an up market. We tend to hold more product. In a down market, we tend to release more product.
So, okay. That makes sense.
So it's just like a lot of people say, how come you're not selling them any notes anymore? And my answer is, where were you 5 years ago? We were selling everything, you know, so it's a function of the market.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you've got a company that's got 30 employees. So talk to me about building that business. You know, how did you successfully build that company and bring in those people and operate it efficiently?
Well, I mean, it's funny you say that. Like my 10-year vision is to have a billion under management, right? So you can't get to a billion overnight. It takes a while, but we'll do that in less than 10 years, I believe. So
okay. The
cool part is, how do you get there? Now, we started out with just me and my two partners, literally on a napkin at a place for lunch, mapping this out, who was going to do what, that type of thing. And we were just a club. We started out with four loans. And one loan was a grand slam, one was a home run, and two we lost our money on. So if I'd only bought two loans, we probably wouldn't be talking, right? But the good news is, you know, it just morphed into that. You know, we started out with our own money, and we made sure the model worked, and then we started raising other people's money, and then, you know, that just kind of blossomed into that. And I had been raising capital for commercial real estate prior to that, for mobile home parks, storage centers, commercial office condos that were new development, you know. And so I was used to raising money. And, you know, then I just switched into raising money for mortgages, and it kind of went on from there. But probably the best way that I built it was putting a team together and having the right coaches. So I've had different business coaches over the years. Today, you know, my main coach, I actually have two coaches. I'm in a CEO think tank, and I'm also have a coach named Lewis Schiff, who is with Birthing a Giant out of New York. And he's written a couple books, Business Brilliant, and he came from the Inc. 5000 world. So okay. He used to work for Inc. 5000, which is the top 5000 non-publicly traded companies. So great, you know, these guys are brilliant, and you realize how much you don't know when they're coaching you. So it's good though. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard that over and over as I interview people. A lot of people say, just, you got to get a coach. You got to get those mentors, people that know way more about what you're doing than you do. People who are a lot smarter, or, you know, who are a lot more talented.
Well, when you get to the top, there's no one to ask, right? Yeah. So if you're the smartest person in the group, it's time to get in a new group, you know? So you can't be afraid to, you know, like some groups are actually designed based on your revenue levels, for example. And that makes sense, because you'll outgrow that group at some point, you know, where you're trying to get into another level. I mean, some of the people in my group today make me feel this big. they're really knocking it out of the park. Well, the Inc. 5000, you know, Microsoft was in there, right?
Yeah.
So some of these companies have really taken it off, you know, so.
Well, but I mean, that's good. So you're in there with high players, and you're going to learn from that a lot. So it's awesome to get in those.
Yeah, it's
groups.
Exciting.
Yeah, awesome. Give me one of the biggest mistakes you've made in your business, and how did you learn from it?
Biggest mistakes. Well, there's so many I make. Probably the biggest is, well, it's pretty easy. The biggest was giving up control. So one of the projects I was involved in, well, a couple of them, sometimes it was a land development deal. Sometimes it's market forces and you lose your money, and it really had nothing to do with the project or the people you're with. But the one project I was in, you know, raising money, giving over my own money into a project that I didn't have control over the project. So basically we lost our money over management's ego, the partners were suing each other, and the business went down the tubes, and I probably lost $250,000, which was a big hit for me. And, you know, this is definitely my biggest mistake, but I don't know, you know, I look back on it and I go, I don't know that I would have traded it or not done it, because I learned so much doing it and learned so much working for the company. Cause I started out, that was probably the first place I raised capital, you know, and if I look back, once we get to $1 billion under management, and I look back and say, you remember when you lost $250,000 over here? It might not bother you when you're making $500 million in revenue. You know, 10 or 15 years later, you know, going to go, well, I would never make $500 million in revenue if I didn't lose $250 million 15 years ago. You know, I know it's a weird way to look at it, but
no, I think that's a great, I mean, that's a great way to look at it. I mean, I've lost money on deals. I've never $250 million. That's that definitely ups me. But you learn a lot from them. So what's like one, is there one key takeaway or maybe a couple things? Like, how could you do that? How could you get by with not losing $250,000?
Well, you would have control, right? So I didn't own the project. Today I own the project.
Sure.
So back then, but here's the thing. The project was tight. The project was viable. The numbers all made sense. I just couldn't predict that the partners were questionable.
Yeah.
Now, you could do background checks and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know that you'll pick up egos. You know, it's you know, that's why you could have the perfect stock and it goes bad, right? You know, you could I've had that happen before where I invested in flak jackets for the Iraq war where they had the sole contract for the government. And the company was going to go through the roof, right? And they ran off with all the money. So you can have the greatest company in the world. And if they take off with all the money, there's nothing you can do about that, right? So there's only so much due diligence you can do. But when it comes to yourself, if you're in control, well, then you don't have to trust anybody. You are the person, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So don't give up control is really the big lesson there, especially on something high dollar like that, you know?
Okay. Cool. For someone that's trying to take it to this, you know, $1 billion level or even multi-million dollar level, like you're trying to do, you know, what does it take to get there?
Wow. Probably discipline's probably the biggest thing. Persistence and all those other things. What else was it? Insanity. Right. Knowing when to say no, you know, knowing when to say no to certain things. But I think it's probably discipline. I mean, when I look at, you know, how many investors are disciplined in what they do, you know, even when I was a smaller investor, even if I had a big payday, I woke up the next day and, you know, went back to work on Monday like nothing happened. Even when I was a realtor, you know, you'd get a big commission. I would see realtors go, oh, you know, and they'd go live it rich for 2 weeks or something because they had a big payday. I just never did that. I just went back to work the next day like nothing happened. And maybe it was from when I owned a painting company years ago. I had 12 employees. And in the painting business, it's seasonal, right? So you would make these big checks all summer.
Yeah.
Well, you had to ride through the winter, you know, and the toughest months were always March and April when everybody thought it was January. And it wasn't tough in January. It was later on when you didn't have any checks coming in and all the construction sites started up again. So, you know, you had those tough months coming up and, you know, your wintertime, you just basically made wages to keep the lights on. And then in the summer you made all your money. So I guess that maybe kind of taught me that, and real estate commissions went like this, you know, up and down.
Yeah.
So you just were reluctant to, you know, go party up the money you made.
I think you know, I see it a lot as just people have their 9-to-5 jobs and they do a flip or they do something big that they make, you know, 50 or 100 grand on, and then they just want to go spend,
go to Vegas or something. Yeah.
Spend most of it. Yeah. Actually, my brother, did, you know, he bought a car. We did a project together and made some good money. Each of us made a pretty good chunk, and he went and, you know, I think he went and bought a car and then bought a couple other things. And he asked me before he did that, he said, what would you do? And I said, I'd go buy some rental properties if you want to buy a car and make sure you can make your mortgage or make your car payment with your rental properties. You go do that.
Yeah.
Instead, he just bought a car cash because he didn't want that loan, which I get, but, you know, there goes that money gone. So
yeah, it's more like have your, like you said, have your assets pay your liabilities. You know?
Yeah. So cool. Take us through that mind shift. Maybe you've always been that entrepreneur because you had the painting company and all that kind of stuff. But take us through that mind shift you know, becoming an entrepreneur?
For me, it started in like fourth grade. I mean, I had a paper route, and I had five siblings. So I was like the family bank. I was the guy that always had money. I was the guy that always had a business. I was the guy that was always selling something. I know that sounds bizarre, but if you asked any of my brothers or sisters or even my friends from childhood, you know, did they ever think I would be where I'm at or doing, and they would all go, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
I don't know that there was a switch. I mean, even when I was a kid, I knew I'd be wealthy and successful. Even when I was in like fourth grade, I knew.
That's unique. So were your parents entrepreneurial, or was anybody in your family a business owner? Or?
My father was a little bit, but they were like side businesses. He had a main job. And then, sure. You know, at one time he did have an aluminum siding business, and he had a hoagie shop one time. But none of them lasted it, you know, real long periods of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And your brothers and sisters aren't.
I have a brother that has two restaurants.
So. Okay. Okay. So
a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
And my sister has a couple hair salons. Yeah.
It's very interesting to hear somebody that, you know, started from when they're young like that. And you just always had that drive, that mindset. And I thought
it was through education at first. Like if I, you know, I was probably the only sibling I was the only one to finish college or anything. And I just figured, you know, if I went to school, I'd be, you know, that was my ticket out of, you know, my mom was a single mom with six kids. So. But I figured education was my ticket out, and it was partly true, but it was more than that, to your point. And but I was always determined, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You always had that extra little thing that said,
right,
I'm not just going to do what everybody else does.
Yeah. In fact, when I look back at all the wealth building strategies and techniques that I had, I actually just finished a book on that. It was really – anti-herd. What everybody else did, I kind of did the opposite
of. Okay.
And almost all the wealth that I accumulated was from not doing what everybody else did. Kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, and that goes along with, you know, like the Warren Buffett, how he talks is just like, if you're investing when everybody else is investing, you're basically doing it wrong.
Right.
You should be doing what nobody else wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, some of this, probably a couple of the easy ones are most people will, you know, I look back, I used to sell insurance too. And one of the things I look back on is I call it the football game of life between like 25 and 65. And it's a sprint to 65 as I get closer. But most mistakes are made between 25 and 35 for people. And by that, usually their biggest mistakes with housing too. So they rent too much house, or they bite off too much house, or they get stuck in a house or a mortgage and they can't really grow or get out of it because they can't save any money. They're house rich, cash poor, so to speak.
Yep.
And one of the things I did differently, for example, was every house I lived in turned into a rental later. So I bought it intentionally as an investment. I knew my exit before I went into the deal, so to speak. Whereas I think most people buy a house out of needing a place to live, not as an investment. So if you bought your first, I don't care if it's a condo or a townhouse or a twin house, and then eventually you end up in this single, most people that are successful, they bought and sold, bought and sold, bought and sold, and they end up in this big single, and they're 45 to 55 years old. And if they're doing well, their accountant's telling them to buy a vacation home or to buy a duplex. And when they go to do that, it's pretty expensive with down payment and interest rate and stuff. When they already had the owner-occupied financing on their first two or three houses, if they had kept them as rentals. Yeah. So if they had bought them intentionally, where the payment was less than rent or whatever, they would have great financing. Even if they didn't like real estate investing and they just did that one strategy, they wouldn't have lost all their closing costs along the way and that type of thing. They would have had better terms and they would have more write-offs as they were accumulating. That single bucket of wealth right there, just in their primary residence, would have probably doubled.
Oh, yeah.
Just in that one little bucket, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's – you're right on, and that's fantastic advice, especially for – just to me, anybody anybody. I mean, you're buying a, like you said, everybody buys a house instead of selling that thing. Keep it.
That probably the other, another strategy would be to, well, obviously save as much money on taxes as you can. If you can find the tax strategies, because that's extra money to invest. The other one is, I was touched on the HELOCs, home equity lines of credit. Most people don't utilize the equity they build up. And if you do, you know, you can build your wealth that, you know, you can build your wealth twice as fast. Especially if you do something like I figured out after a while, was a lot of guys will use their home equity lines of credit to do more real estate deals. I kind of took that to a different level. I kind of used that for notes, and I used like a private money lender for my real estate deals. And I used my money for shorter term deals, or for me to lend out, or for me to do notes. So then I'm building wealth twice as fast.
Yep.
I'm doing twice as many deals. Whereas a lot of times we tend to think small as real estate investors. We think too small, or we don't, you know, I look back where I had all the things connected, because I was, you know, a realtor and I was a property manager and I owned a title company and I did all these things. But I didn't, you know, I was doing it for all the investors I was selling it to. I didn't realize I could have been buying all the properties and kept and doing them all if I thought bigger, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. And I have a buddy that owns 1,500 houses and I'm like, well, how did he get to 1,500 houses, you know? So me, I only got up to 40 and then switched into the note space. But
I want to know how he keeps himself sane with 1,500 houses.
Well, he owns a brokerage and a property management company. That'll help. But
yeah, for sure. So I want to go on. What are your three key factors to success that you can tell our audience?
Well, we kind of touched on some of them. A lot of them is definitely discipline, having the right team, knowing when to say no. I read a lot. Somewhere between 25, 50 books a year. So I read a lot. But always self-improving.
Yeah.
You know, but really surrounding yourself with the right team. Finding, knowing yourself is probably a big one. I probably wasn't into my 40s before I really started to know myself and what I'm good at. And, you know, it's funny, in Business Brilliant, that book I mentioned, there's a, he surveys all these people and he backs it up with a lot of data, and he's surveying people that make over $30 million a year in revenue, just for the personal revenue. And then he takes blue collar people. And if you were to ask a blue collar person, hey, name all the things you're good at, right? And you might list 5 or 10 things. And if he went and asked, you know, Richard Branson or somebody, tell me all the things you're good at, he's going to tell you one, maybe two things. That's it. And it took a while for that to click for me, where, you know, I'm never going to be good in probably in golf or French or typing or a lot of other things, but I am good at one thing, and that's raising a lot of capital. So it's really, you know, or whatever that is, it's really figuring out what you're really good at, focus on that, and then surround yourself with all the best of the best at all the other things you're not good at. Like, I'm not a good IT guy, you know, and I know that. So it's, you just can't be afraid of that and just go, no, I'm going to put together a team that the best of the best in all the areas that I'm not.
Were you the one at the conference that said you want to be the dumbest one in your company and surround yourself?
Is that you? Probably me. It probably is me. So yeah, you do want to be the dumbest one at your company, but you don't want anybody else to know that. But no, and I don't mean it quite that way, but right, you do. You want to be, but you want to be the connector. You do want to put it all together. And at the end of the day, sometimes you got to make tough decisions based on the information you get from those smart people.
Yeah.
And so you got to be decisive sometimes, even when it's not popular.
Yeah.
And you got to know when to make, you don't always have to make the right decision, but you sometimes you have to make the decision right, you know. You got to be willing to course correct when you know
Absolutely.
I went down a couple wrong rabbit holes, so to speak, and you can't be, you got to admit, humble yourself and say, nah, that was the wrong way to go. Let's go back, or let's go this way.
Yeah. Take responsibility for it and then course correct, move on.
Yeah.
Let everybody know. Well, we've already talked about your goals, so we can skip that. Very impressive goals, by the way. I hope you get there, and I know you will.
Well, I have some other goals. I mean, it's not just money, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Probably the biggest thing for me as a company is, you know, we're pretty disruptive in banking, and we're pretty disruptive to financial services or financial advisors even.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, I'm trying to design a company where you can invest 24 hours a day on your cell phone in a Wall Street product like mine, without middlemen, without fees, where the guy next door can invest in us, you know, maybe someday through crowdfunding, for example, or,
sure.
You know, it's very disruptive when you think about how traditional, you know, Wall Street investments were sold. They're not sold on a cell phone 24 hours a day for the guy next door, you know, that he can get a decent yield. And in reality, that's kind of what's happening with the, you know, the different sites that you see that are funding hard money, or they're funding this and that, you know, so it's a changing world, and we're kind of part of that, you know? So.
Yeah. These crowdfunding portals are definitely disrupting Wall Street. I'm sure Wall Street's not too excited, and if they're smart, they're going to jump on it.
I think at first they're kind of writing them off, but these fintech companies are going to get bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden Wall Street's going to go, where did they come from?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So what are a few books that you can recommend us? One business book that you want to recommend, and maybe one personal growth one?
Well, probably on the business side, it's, you know, we've been, I'm a student of the, like I said, I'm in a CEO think tank, which is really the Rockefeller Habits, and Vern Harnish, who's a Gazelle's coach. He's also wrote the book Scaling Up. And the book Traction is like a derivative of that.
Yep.
Gino Wickman studied under Vern Harnish and those guys. And Vern was tied into the Inc. 5000 as well. So you can see this connection here of where my coaching comes from. And a lot of these guys are coming out of the, that MIT Harvard world too, you know. Sure. So it's like there's a lot of smart people that went ahead of us that know a lot of smart things about the right way to run things. And Jim Collins and those guys, right? So Scaling Up is probably if you're building your business, it's a great book. Just look at the title, right?
Yep.
But if you're going into on the development side, I am a real estate investor. And I think a lot of because I did sell insurance and did a little financial planning, I like some of the planning books. So I like Misfortune 101 by Doug Andrew. And I like Killing Sacred Cows by Gunderson. They're a little bit on the planning side. And I think the typical real estate investor kind of forgets about planning. And I understand why, because it's a, it's a weird business, the financial planning business. And I think most investors, they get skewed by it. They don't know who to believe or what products are available. But once you do get an understanding of what can be done when you combine them, it's pretty talk about building wealth and the pillars of wealth. We kind of look at, I run a group of high net worth investors, for example, and our group acts like Yelp for real estate investments and really alternative investments. So it's almost like a mutual fund of alternative investments. And of course my company is one of them, but my self-directed retirement account can't invest in my own company. So I'm always looking for stuff too.
Yeah.
So I put together a group about 3-4 years ago of high net worth people. It's called Strategic Investor Alliance. And what we do is we share resources, we share advisors, and we share alternative investment vehicles. And what we've done is the group like acts like Yelp for that. Hmm. And as a group, we're pretty powerful. And most of us are millionaires, under 25 million in assets, we're smaller millionaires. And, but like I took the idea from family offices. Family offices are typically 200 million and up, and they have their own board of advisors and they have their own investment committee. Whereas the little guy doesn't, right? The little guy's fragmented. His like my wife's not on board with my accountant, who's on board with my insurance agent, who's on board with my broker, who's on board with my real estate guy. You know, it's just like everything's fragmented, right?
Yep.
So I try to bring it all into one place. And so it's a great, powerful tool like that, where we get to, you know, it's an invite only group. It's, we share resources, and it's a unique way to kind of accomplish that. To where you can build this trust that you can, because that's, I think, a big part of it. But I think a lot of the financial planning techniques that are valuable are overlooked a lot of times by real estate investors.
For sure, for sure. What's your definition of to financial freedom for you?
Well, from the cash flow perspective, I probably was financially free at age 42 when I had gotten hurt and I got out of my contracting business and I had enough rental properties. I didn't have to work. And I actually took like 3 months off and I was bored to tears. And you know, my wife was like, "You're not going to be home again today, are you?" And I actually went and got an office to get out of the house at one point. And then, you know, obviously I started the company I have now and some other things. But, you know, the fact that you don't have to wake up and go do something, but that doesn't mean you're not going to. And I think today, I think everything I do is a bigger purpose. And really, it's more about serving others now. It's more about teaching others. It's more about helping others build their wealth. You know, I don't really want for anything. You know, I have 3 great grandkids and 2 sons and, you know, great family. And, you know, I'm not a super materialistic type person or anything. So today, most of what I do is on the charitable type side. You know, I do some other things that are more rewarding to me, you know, and one of them is I try to use my real estate in other ways that are more beneficial. So for example, I own and operate a drug and alcohol recovery center in one of my properties, where I'm doing real estate, but I'm having a bigger impact on society than just, you know, having a bunch of rentals or something.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, great. I have a buddy that does the same thing. He has about 39 apartments that are rented to disabled veterans, and his nonprofit owns it. You know, so there's things we can do as real estate investors and investors in general. Yeah. Where what we're doing has a bigger impact in some way. I'm not saying you have to do it the way I'm doing it. You know, but like I have a real estate event coming up, the Mid-Atlantic Summit in Philadelphia in the spring, and all the proceeds are going to homeless charity in Philadelphia, right? So I'm running an event, not making any money from it, donating it all to charity. So I think it's, those things are cool if you can pull it off, you know?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Appreciate you sharing that. The last thing is, how can people get in touch with you? I know you got a book or maybe 2 books. And
I actually have a book called Real Estate Note Investing. It's published through Bigger Pockets. If you go to biggerpockets.com/note investing, you can actually, there's a couple neat bonus programs there as well. We have an interview with an asset protection attorney, Mary Hart. Also have an interview with Brandon Turner, where we actually go to like FCI Exchange, a couple websites to analyze notes to buy.
Yeah.
Walk through different types of notes, what we look at. So that's kind of neat. And then there's an ebook in there, some pitfalls to watch out for, as well as the book. But the book is kind of like a story of notes all through your life, not just institutional notes, not just seller finance notes, how to buy houses better using notes, how to sell houses better using notes. You know, one of the things I'm doing right now, just on a personal note, is I've been a guy that's been in accumulation mode my whole life, you know, trying to acquire more and more properties and more wealth.
Yeah.
And lately I've been paying properties off and I've been moving them into a family trust, and I'm actually praying interest rates go up so that I can sell them on owner financing to other investors where I'll hold the paper for them.
Sure.
And if the rates go up, obviously I can cash flow longer. So now I want to cash flow for the next 20 years or so from these properties, and I'm out of the maintenance business. And you know, as I get older, that's better for me and my estate, because I'm sure my My wife never says, what's she say to me? You're not going to die and leave me all those junk properties, are you? But she never says that about my my notes.
Your notes.
She never says, sell all your notes. The payment's coming in the bank account. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's just another way of looking at things. I forget what I was talking about. You have me off on so many rabbit holes.
Contact.
Oh, contact. Right. My website is probably the easiest. PPRnoteCo.com. PPRnoteCo.com. Or you can find me on Bigger Pockets. I write a lot of articles on there as well. Been writing articles weekly for the last 5 years.
Do you have a specific web page for the that conference that you mentioned? Somebody wants to go to that?
MidAtlanticSummit.com. MidAtlanticSummit.com.
Okay.
This is our first year. We're almost sold out.
Wow.
Yeah, we're capped at like 400 people, and it's close. It's really cool. close to selling out. So it's going to be a great time. A lot of folks that you probably know will be there. A lot of Bigger Pockets folks as well.
Sure. Yeah. We'll put all that stuff in the show notes.
Yeah, great.
Awesome. Well, Dave, I appreciate you joining me and appreciate the advice you've given all of us.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you have a great day, and I will be in touch with you.
All right. Sounds good, my man. Take care. Right.
Thanks.
Right. You
too. See you. A special thanks to Dave Van Horn for joining us on Pillars of Wealth Creation. I appreciate his time, his valuable insights. Three things that I took from Dave is, one is stay disciplined. He talked about that several times, staying disciplined, making sure you're staying the course. If you're not making any money or if things aren't seeming like they're going well, it's important to stay disciplined. Also, same thing as if you're making money and all of a sudden you get this big check or, you know, property, you flip a property or you do a property, things go really well. It's important to stay disciplined and stay on that course of action. Just because one project is really good doesn't mean they're all going to be like that. And so don't go out there and blow your money or just think that you have it all made. The next thing is know when to say no. And I think that's really important. Sometimes you just have to say no. Sometimes you have to make sure you stay focused on what you want to do, stay disciplined, and that you say no when you need to. The last thing is having the right team and going along with that, knowing yourself. So knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are. And as he said, you have one, maybe two things that you should be focusing on that are your real big strengths, and the rest of it, you should have a team formed around you to complement you and to grow that business. So stay disciplined, know when to say no, have the right team along with knowing yourself were the three things I took from this lesson. So again, appreciate Dave joining us, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Go on to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating review if you can. That helps us grow. And you can feel free to go to Facebook too and join our Facebook page, Pillars of Wealth Creation Facebook page. And you can ask us questions and give us some feedback as well. I'm Todd Dexhammer. I'm signing out. Make every day Saturday. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call.
With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.